Hey, listeners, on May 13th, we invite you to join us and Reid Hoffman for a new virtual strategy session presented in alliance with Capital One Business. You'll hear insights from fellow entrepreneurs about how to be at the forefront of leading change with AI. So go to mastersofscale.com AI strategy right now to register for free. Again, that's mastersofscale.com AI strategy. Looking forward to seeing you there.
In France, we have a lot of holidays. I would spend most of my holidays at my grandparents' house. And every morning, my grandfather, who was always waking up early, would come and knock on the door. And I would just get up. It was still pitch dark. That was the exciting time. It's like you didn't know what was going to happen. We would have a piece of bread with a piece of cheese to start the day, and then we would go to the garage, pick up our bags. My grandfather would be leading the way, and we would bike across the countryside, and then by the time the baker would open, which is usually about 7:30, we would go there, pick up a fresh baguette, and then bike back home. These bike rides were basically my childhood. He would talk to me about his past. He was born in the south of France without a father, as a what we call a no-land farmer, so someone who basically had only his two arms to work. And from the age of 12, started working to support his mother and his siblings. And then World War II happened. And my grandfather decided when he was 16 to go into the resistance. And he lost part of his right hand when he was not even 18. He went on working three jobs to sustain a family. He had this incredible set of values that really resonated with me and that I carry to this day. He would talk to me about all the things that matter in life. He would be like, nothing worth doing is ever easy. He talked about why, saying you should always ask why. Because if you ask why five times, you're going to get to the bottom of whatever it is that you're looking for. You need to understand why someone is asking you to do something or why you're doing something. My grandfather used to say, thank you is the most important word. So merci in French. And for him, this thank you was more than just saying thank you because someone holds the door for you. It was more like, thank you for the opportunity that I have to be alive. Thank you for the fact that I have amazing grandchildren. Thank you for the fact that there was fresh bread today. And so I feel like that gratitude, that way of looking at the world in a glass half full type of way, is so important to me as an entrepreneur. I see a lot of the decision-making that I follow use this set of values that my grandfather drilled into my brain.
That's Mael Gavet, CEO of the global startup accelerator Techstars. The wisdom Mael absorbed from her grandfather Pierre when she was a girl in the French countryside became the foundation for a remarkable career. She's a founder, an entrepreneur, and a longtime C-suite executive. Mael was recently named to the list of Barron's 100 most influential women in U.S. finance. She helped scale the Russian e-commerce giant Ozon, raising the largest ever venture round in Europe at the time. And she's held executive roles at massively scaled companies, including the real estate firm Compass and the Priceline Group. Mael became CEO of Techstars in 2021. Techstars is a pre-seed investor and accelerator program for early-stage entrepreneurs. Mael embodies the spirit of entrepreneurship and is remarkably savvy when it comes to navigating large companies. It's that mix that makes her story so rich to explore on Masters of Scale.
You got to have incredible talent at every position.
It's like this huge push.
There are fires burning when you're going home.
Can you believe it?
Such an idiot. And then you go back to, this is totally going to be amazing.
There are so many easy wins.
I'm so sorry what to do. I have no idea what to do.
Sorry, we made a mistake.
But you have to time it right.
Oops.
Working out of a three-bedroom apartment.
Stuff that just seems absolutely nutballs. 10 years later, I'm like, well, that's just how you do it.
We haven't made
just how you do it.
This is Masters of Scale.
Hi, listeners. It's Erica Flynn, VP of Alliances and Audience Development at Wait What, the company behind Masters of Scale. My day-to-day consists of nonstop communication, not only with my immediate team, but with our current partner relationships and with incoming leads from possible future partners, which is why I rely on the ease of Grammarly to keep my communication clear and efficient. One confusing email can turn into several confused replies, which can turn into an unexpected meeting which no one wants, needs, or has time for. Having Grammarly on hand as my trusted AI writing partner not only streamlines my extensive to-do list, it minimizes miscommunication by quickly and efficiently synthesizing information and carefully curating tailor-made responses to specific groups. In fact, companies that use Grammarly to communicate can save 19 days per year per employee. Grammarly eases the writing process. It's a writing partner from the blank page to the last word typed before hitting send. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster, hit their goals, and keep their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
I'm Jeff Berman, your host. Our guest is Mayel Gavay. I've heard Mayel share her expertise with young entrepreneurs and with seasoned corporate leaders. That made me eager to know her full story. From France to Russia and now the U.S., Mayel has shown her ability to stick to steadfast principles, demonstrating gratitude and perseverance amid great change and uncertainty. I began by asking Mayel how, as a young woman from the south of France, she landed her first CEO role in Russia.
I was working for the Boston Consulting Group, and I had just moved to Moscow because I was preparing to become a partner. And my very last project was for Ozone, which at the time was a small e-commerce company, probably one of a dozen e-commerce companies in Russia. And so I did that project, which was a very short project, probably 6 weeks. And I had this aha moment where I thought, oh, here I was working for that company as a consultant. And I was like, I wonder what it would be to work for such a company. And the CEO at the time approached me at the end of the project. And he was like, we're looking for a sales and marketing director. I think you'd be awesome. By the way, in about a year and a half, I'm going to leave Russia. And I'm looking for my successor. And I want to be clear, there's three other candidates internally. So I'm not telling you here's the job. But if you're interested, that's something that you could try to get. And there was a moment where I was like, what do I have to lose? And so I basically went back to the office and sat down with the senior partner at the time and was like, I think I'm going to quit. And I joined Ozone. I became the sales and marketing director. And then a year later, I was promoted to CEO. That's how it happened.
In that moment, minutes away from becoming a partner at BCG, which is a dream career trajectory for many people, you're presented with an opportunity where there really are no guarantees. Had you been a sales and marketing person before that?
No, but I had been an entrepreneur. And when you're an entrepreneur, you wear every single hat on the planet. And I think you develop this capacity to make things happen.
At the age of 16, she started her first business, organizing children's birthday parties in France. She then aimed to get into an elite college. To differentiate herself, she learned Russian, not exactly the easiest path one could choose. As a teen, Mayel visited Russia dozens of times to volunteer at an orphanage, and by 20, she'd founded an event planning business in Moscow. Mayel had been through the entrepreneur's 0-1 phase, building something out of nothing. So when the opportunity to lead Ozone presented itself, she was excited because the 0-1 part was done, but the company still had the energy, the attitude, and the unlimited potential of a startup.
I can work in an entrepreneurial company without having to go through the 0-1 because I had been an entrepreneur 3 times before. And every time I was like, oh my God, the 0-1 is so excruciating and it feels so lonely and you have to build so many things from scratch. And so I was like, look, this CEO, which I admire, which I think is very smart and very thoughtful, strong IQ and EQ, thinks that I have a shot at it. So yeah, sure, let's go and do it. But for me, the most important feeling. It was not even rational. It was like, I felt fear and excitement at the same time. And that in my life has always been the signal that there is something I should be doing.
Not everyone leans into fear. So what was that about for you?
Not just fear, fear and excitement. It's the combination of the two. Because if there are also times where I'm like fearful and I'm like, okay, let's just step back and think about it. But as a former entrepreneur, it was this moment where I was like, I am excited because I see something that could be really big. I thought that this company had a real shot at becoming the largest e-commerce company in Russia and had all the basic infrastructure that leveraged properly would help them get there. And at the same time, there was a little bit of fear because I was like, it looks really hard. It looks really complex. When I feel that combination of like, there is something big and maybe I'm not going to get it, that I don't know, maybe my inner competitive double is like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Let's just prove to the world that this can happen.
Maya was willing to work hard, and that enabled her to savor the challenges. She knew that by taking them on, she would learn and grow. But the work meant growing an e-commerce company in a country where half the population wasn't online, where more than 80% of transactions were cash on delivery, where no one paid in advance, and where branded delivery trucks or uniforms could lead to armed robbery. Mael says the country was eager to develop back then, in 2009.
Russia at the time was a very different environment than what it is right now. I worked in Russia at a time where the country was very open to the outside world. Foreign investors were coming and investing. You could feel the desire for the country to modernize. It was very cosmopolitan. There was a lot of big hope and big vision. I'm a relentless optimist. I believe that there is always a way to make things work. Thanks to my grandfather, I had a very strong compass in terms of what I'm okay to do and not okay to do. When I was talking to him about why he decided to go into the resistance, because we all know not all French people made that decision, he was like, you got to fight for what you believe in. And so when the board of Ozone talked to me about joining them, we had a very open conversation about maybe you'll be the next CEO. I had a very direct conversation with them. Just to be clear, this business has to be squeaky clean. There's no other option. I would not be running a business if I had to pay bribes. That was a non-starter. And I would fight for what I believed in, and that included running a really, really clean business.
Mael stuck to her principles, and she succeeded. Whether you run a $1 billion-a-year retailer or a small neighborhood shop, we all have difficult choices to make. But they can be made with greater clarity if you're guided by values and boundaries that you will not cross, no matter the pressure. Under her leadership, Ozone raised a venture capital round of $100 million. At the time, in 2011, that was the largest of any company in all of Europe. By 2015, Ozone had reached a valuation of $1.5 billion. And perhaps more importantly, Mael had helped build Russia's first nationwide retail delivery network.
Part of the success of Ozone, by the way, came from the fact that we built the first nationwide private delivery infrastructure. And so we were able to deliver books and toys and mobile phone to places where within, whatever, less than a week, especially if you were to go all the way to Vladivostok.
Vladivostok, more than 5,000 miles from Moscow on the far eastern coast of Russia.
In a place where sometime delivery was not even possible, or it would take like a month, 2 months, 3 months, 5 months. The key differentiator was that we were able to build that nationwide delivery system. And I sometimes joked, but I don't know if it was a joke. Like, I do think that Amazon did copy some of the thing that we were doing because we invented pickup points. We had 2,000 plus pickup point across Russia because at the time in Russia, it was all cash on delivery. And we had to figure out a way for people to get their goods and pay us at the same time. And so we created this pickup point. And then a couple of years later, Amazon launches their own pickup point.
At the core, Mael and Ozone were simply responding to a logistics problem. Ozon didn't become the largest retailer in Russia by simply deploying technology that was already available in other countries. Their solutions were specific to Russia's population and its vast geography.
I think technology is an amazing opportunity, but the challenge is to find the right balance. I think in Silicon Valley, there is this tendency to look at everything through the lens of technology and forget the human. And then in other companies, there's a tendency to look at everything through the eyes of the human and forget that technology is actually a great way to complement and enhance human. And so it's constantly finding this balance between high tech and high touch. Difficult, but when you hit that right balance, like that's where magic happens.
But larger forces came to bear on Mael's success with Ozon. In 2014, Russia attacked its sovereign neighbor, Ukraine, and it annexed Crimea. The world responded with widespread sanctions, and the Russian government placed even more restrictions on online services. Mael decided that her time in Russia was over.
I have not been back there since I left.
Was it hard to leave?
A little bit.
What was hard about it?
It felt that there were so much more that could have been done. Mm. And so it was just a little sad because I wanted to do even more.
Well, you'd built so much. And if there was so much more to do, how incredibly difficult to then walk away.
Yeah, a little bit. As my grandfather was saying, nothing worth doing is ever easy. You got to fight for what you believe in, which means that if the right decision is option A, even if there's a cost for option A, go with option A.
After the break, Mael embarks on her next chapter in the United States, where she continues to deploy her grandfather's life lessons to extraordinary results.
Hey, listeners, it's Jodine Dorsey, the VP of Live Events at Wait What, the company behind Masters of Scale. I am constantly tasked with reaching out to teams across a wide spectrum of professions and the vastly different personalities that go with them. Grammarly helps me quickly shift tones to better communicate what I want to say and saves me valuable time in the process. Our upcoming Masters of Scale Summit event features top-tier speakers from CEOs to founders to political leaders. Grammarly's ability to produce on-brand writing helps me properly prepare for each and every thought leader I interact with on stage. It lets me generate the most exciting, specialized content for our audience. In fact, teams that use Grammarly report 66% less time spent editing marketing content, which I've seen firsthand with my summit team. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster, hit their goals, and keep their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
We're back with Mael Gavay, CEO of Techstars and longtime friend of Masters of Scale. You can watch our full conversation and more on our YouTube channel. Before the break, Mael was telling us about the difficult decision to leave her post as CEO of the largest online retailer in Russia. She had several options for her next move, and she wound up in the United States.
When you left, how did you decide what to go do next?
I wanted to see a very big company, and I wanted to see a public company because I believed that at some point in my career, I would be taking a company, whether it would be my company from the ground up or a company that I would be hired to manage, to that unprecedented scale. And I wanted to experience it from the inside. And I was approached by the Priceline Group, which is now called Booking Holding, which owns Booking.com, Priceline.com, obviously, thanks to William Shatner. Everybody knows Priceline. Open Table, Kayak, Rental Cars, Agoda, and I can't remember a few others. At the time, they were already, I think, a $70 billion market cap company. I had a ton of respect for the chairman of the board, Jeff Boyd. I've never seen someone run a public company board as efficiently as Jeff. He had this uncanny ability to have this great relationship with the CEO, but also with every board member, while at the same time being very, very directive in the way the board was supposed to function. And he seems to intuitively always understand that balance of being friendly and being demanding, being open and being directive, encouraging people to participate into an open debate and yet close the debate when we've been around the block a few times. We're good. Let's move on. And so I think this incredible EQ around how to manage the dynamic of a board to make it really effective. And I saw Jeff Boyd do that regularly and seamlessly. And like to this day, it remains the benchmark for me in terms of what a outstanding chairman looks like.
Knowing when to continue debate and when to stop and make a decision. That's a critical skill for anyone in business. Mayel rightly admired the chairman, Jeff Boyd, for his balanced leadership. She also admired the Priceline Group's nimble culture, allowing the brands it acquired to maintain their unique pre-acquisition qualities.
They were big, and yet they had kept this entrepreneurial spirit. Most of the brand were still being run by the founder slash the original team. So Steve Hafner was still at Kayak. And he was still going around and you know, making his interesting jokes on stage and but also running the business from the inside. And the group had figured out a way to create commonality and a camaraderie spirit and yet keep them independent. So the founder would still feel like that was their business and they were still running it. It was still a company made of entrepreneurs who were figuring out new stuff every day on big thing and small things.
Why aren't more leadership teams at big companies who are doing the acquiring looking at the Priceline booking model and saying, that works, we should be doing a version of that?
I've seen countless time big company buying a small company and no, using these words, but basically having that attitude of like, I own you, you're mine. And so when that happened, like, inevitably, things are shifting step by step. It's like, oh, you decided to spend how much on what? Why? I would never have done it like that. And it's one thing when you're just looking at it from the outside, but when you own that business and they just announce to you that they're going to spend a few million dollars on something that you personally believe is completely silly, it becomes really hard to be like, let me look the other way and let them go. And I think the strength of what the Priceline Group, Booking Holding were doing at the time, and as far as I can tell, are still doing, was, it's okay. Yeah, I would have done it differently, but I trust the founder.
From the Priceline Group, Mayel was hired to be the chief operating officer at Compass, the largest residential real estate company by volume in the U.S. Leading operations at an American real estate company may seem as far as can be from delivering books to Vladivostok, but Mayel found parallels in accountability.
They're a public company. It's a business where ultimately you have to show people houses and apartments. It's a people-first business. It's a lot on the relationship. And so finding this balance between we want to have a platform, we want to leverage data, we want to be a tech company, and yet we also are a people-first business. And they had to figure out this interesting hybrid model where you're both a tech company and Robert Refkin, the founder of Compass, was very adamant about this business is for real estate agents. Everything I do is to help them be better and make more money. And they are my customer. And I saw Robert making dozens of phone calls every day to the agents in the network to wish them a happy birthday, a happy anniversary. Hey, I heard you, one of your kid is sick. Is everything okay? And so that personal relationship was absolutely critical to the business. And a lot of agents just came for Robert. And this is why the Compass experience, which itself came from the Ozone experience where I had to run an e-commerce business, but also 2,000 physical pickup point. And so that hybrid approach was always really critical.
With leadership jobs at household name companies, Mayel's latest move was not, perhaps, an obvious one. In 2021, she became the CEO of Techstars. It's an accelerator that puts early-stage founders through a course of mentoring and fundraising preparation. Again, she considered her options before taking the role, but her motivation to say yes came from a very deep and very personal place.
I come from a family where we never used the word entrepreneur at the dinner table. No one explained to me that venture capital exists. No one walked me through a P&L and a balance sheet. And so I didn't have the connection. Like, I didn't know how to raise money. I didn't know where to find my customers. And when I finally understood what Techstars was providing to entrepreneurs, because I did my homework after two calls with the founder, I was like, I wish I had that when I was an entrepreneur. Like, I wish I had people who deeply cared about my business and had this unbelievable network and would be a safe space for me to talk about all the crazy stuff that I have to deal with. Because let's face it, being an entrepreneur is basically a marathon full of crazy stuff happening one after the other.
Mael's first task was to ask a lot of questions. She wanted to know why Techstars did what it did.
Techstars was, at the time, very focused on developing local communities, but the company didn't really think of itself as an investment business, which was very interesting. So we had, at the time, 280 employees, and I talked to every single employee one-on-one with the same set of questions, including one which was, what is Techstars? What is our business? And not one told me Techstars is an investment business. And I heard everything. I heard we're a marketplace. I heard we're a SaaS business. Then I remember going back to some of the senior leader and be like, so we raise money and we deploy money into early stage startup. Like, we're basically a pre-seed investor, right? It's like, yeah, but that's not how we see ourselves. And so the biggest change internally, and that informed a lot of the strategy decision that we took after I joined, was to look at ourselves as an investment business who is there to help founders be successful. The founder is still absolutely critical. Like, we live and die for the founder. We take common shares in the company. Like, we are with you in the trenches, no matter what. But what we're optimizing for is for you as a founder to be the most successful that you can be. And sometimes it's going to be painful. But, like, remember, nothing worth doing is ever easy.
Techstars expects the founders they work with to put in the effort, especially during the initial three-month program when they work with mentors, develop networks, and begin connecting with investors. Over 70% of Techstars companies raise capital within 3 years after the accelerator program, more than any other global accelerator. Successful Techstars grads include Zipline, the drone delivery service. Also, ClassPass, which delivers access to the world's largest network of fitness courses. From Birmingham to Minneapolis, from Lagos to Tel Aviv, Techstars operates more than 40 programs around the world. And nearly all of the companies they work with are from outside of Silicon Valley.
Talent and ideas are distributed evenly, but opportunities are not. And part of what we're trying to do is to bridge that gap. Not because it's the right thing to do, though it is absolutely the right thing to do, but because it's a good investment case. Like, the best investors are the one who go and invest in things that everybody else is misunderstanding. And so for us at Techstars, it's a lot about, hey, there's this entire group of founders who are completely overlooked by pretty much everyone else. We think that there is an opportunity there.
One of Techstars' key components is mentorship. Mael's own journey is full of mentors, from John Boyd at Priceline to Robert Refkin at Compass to her grandfather, Pierre. And anyone who's had a strong mentor, much less several of them, feels rightly compelled to pay it forward, imparting invaluable life lessons to others.
When you think about the wisdom your grandfather imparted and what you've learned in your career, what are you telling CEOs and what are you doing when you're faced with decisions about when to speak up or when to take a position on something happening in the world?
The conversation I usually have with founders is around, okay, first of all, what are your values? Not the values of the company, though when you're the founder, usually the value of the company and your value do tend to overlap almost like a perfect Venn diagram. But like, what are the things, where do you draw the line? What are the things that you're okay to do and not okay to do? It's really interesting to see that most people actually have never done the exercise of actually writing what are the values that they follow in their life? What are the lines that they are not ready to cross? And also, what are the things that they are very comfortable ways, even though maybe the rest of the world is not. And so my conversation with our portfolio companies around this topic always starts with, tell me what are your values and write them down for
your
me.
Your personal values.
Your personal values. Mm-hmm. Then the next conversation or the follow-on to this question is, tell me what are the values of the company? Usually, again, if it's a founder, they tend to overlap, but not completely. And then I look at the, I help them think about the decision they have to make through that lens. So there are events in the world where your company in one way or another is going to be impacted, is going to be linked to. And in that case, you should use this value as a framework about what you want and don't want to say. But if it's a topic that has nothing to do with your business, I generally advise the CEO to not talk about it, which doesn't mean that they're not allowed to have their own opinion, but I try to have them separate the two.
Because if they do talk about it, it is assumed they're also speaking on behalf of the company.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so whatever they say, whatever they do, it's basically is a reflection of the company. I think everybody at TechSurge, myself included, deeply believes that entrepreneurship is a force of good, sometimes misused, but generally a force of good. And when you empower and support entrepreneurs, you create a better civil society, you create a better economic environment, you create jobs, you create everything that makes the life of everyone better.
Mael Gavay's journey demonstrates the importance of having a strong support system as an entrepreneur, looking for opportunities in overlooked communities, and maintaining an unwavering set of principles. By sticking to what we know to be right and true, we not only do better in business, we do better in life. If that isn't motivation, I don't know what is. I'm Jeff Berman. Thank you for listening. Hi, everyone. It's Jeff Berman, CEO of Wait What and co-host of the Masters of Scale podcast. Like many of you, my to-do list changes by the minute. Whether I'm working with partners or hashing out legal documents or brainstorming with our team, there is never a shortage of tasks that require attention and constant communication. Like Masters of Scale co-host Reid Hoffman, I know artificial intelligence is a huge part of our future, and Grammarly is an enterprising leader in AI. With Grammarly, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. It's like having a collaborator for my writing, helping me generate better first drafts and tailoring messages to our specific audiences. It's not only a superior AI tool, it is a safe AI tool. And as a CEO, security is always top of mind. Grammarly has 14 years of experience and a business model that never sells our data. Security has been a priority since day one and continues to be integral to Grammarly's values today. Join me and over 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly to work faster, hit their goals, and keep their data secure. Visit Grammarly.com to learn more. That's Grammarly.com.
Masters of Scale is a Wait What original. Our executive producer is Eve Tro. The production team includes Chris Gauthier, Tucker Ligursky, Masha Makutanina, and Brandon Klein. Mixing and mastering by Aaron Bastinelli. Original music by Ryan Holiday. Our head of podcasts is Lital Malad. Visit mastersofscale.com to find the transcript for this episode and to subscribe to our email newsletter.